Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. A semi-slide triggered by a major drop in NVIDIA. The SMH down nearly 10% this week. And that slump taking the Nasdaq and S&P down with it. Can this bull market keep kicking if the chips continue to crack? We'll break it down straight ahead. Plus, Apple's no good rotten week. The tech giant falling over 6%. And now fears growing that as Washington moves to ban TikTok, China's going to target Apple and others in a proverbial tit for tat. We'll debate that. And later, Netflix crushed the day after earnings, the options action on Microsoft ahead of results, and the Bitcoin halving. Where does the cryptocurrency go from here? We'll talk to the Kraken CEO. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Bono and Eisen, Steve Grasso, and Mike Coe. And we start off with that massive meltdown in NVIDIA, the one seemingly unstoppable semi stock plunging 10% today, its worst day since the start of the pandemic, the drop cutting more than $200 billion from NVIDIA's market cap today alone and taking its value below the $2 trillion mark for the first time since February. The rest of the chip stocks getting hit hard, too. The SMH semi ETF dropping 4.5%, logging its worst week since Jan 2022. It is now down 17% from the record hit just over a month ago. And every single stock in the fund is in correction territory, down 10% or more from their 52-week highs and down more than 34%. Intel dropping 32%. NVIDIA itself now down over 20% from its March 8th record high. And broader tech struggling as well. The Nasdaq down more than 2%, posting its worst week since November of 2022. And here's one more staggering stat for you. Since Monday, the Mag 7, the so-called Magnificent 7, has lost nearly $1 trillion in value. Let that sink in for just a moment. So as you get set to enter the heart of tech earnings season next week, how nervous should investors be about these cracks that we're seeing in the bull market right now? Tim, what do you say?
Well, they should be nervous, especially because this is where leadership has come from. I've tried to point out for a long time that the leadership, first of all, from the Nasdaq has come from the semis. You talked about this move in semis, kind of an eerie 10% on the nose move lower on NVIDIA. Nasdaq's up 87 to 90 basis points year to date. So in other words, this massive rally has almost been taken out completely. Semiconductors, as you said, down 17%. If you think about NVIDIA, semiconductors just relative to the S&P. So again, where's that leadership gone? It's collapsed in the last 3 days. It's down 7.5% in 3 days to the S&P, the SMH, whatever you're following, the SOX semiconductor index. So it's a pretty extraordinary deterioration. And going into earnings, when all we do is talk about, all people complain about, is the lack of breadth in the earnings profile of the S&P. Well, next week is a big week. Comes on a day we're going to spend a lot of time talking about another pressure on mega cap tech, and one we talk about all the time with China. And so you've got exogenous factors, you've got earnings that have to hold up, and you have this kind of a day again. Momentum into a weekend. We know what war does to risk taking going into weekends. That's where we are.
We saw the rollover in semis start long before this week started, but this week in particular, we got a number of data points today. For instance, Supermicro announcing its Q3 earnings date, but not pre-announcing as it has done seven of the last eight quarters. Mm. We had ASML yesterday with disappointing bookings numbers. Yep. We had TSMC cutting their semi growth forecast for the year. So it's not like, this is based on nothing, that this is just a shift. It is a shift in sentiment, but there are data points to be concerned about when it comes to this really hot AI semi trade.
I think I agree to an extent. So in terms of the ASML, I think that was a warning shot across the bow.
Yeah.
But I still think there's some bifurcation there. I think the things, your NXPIs, your OMs that are exposed to EVs, I think those are the ones that are probably bearing the brunt there. I think Qualcomm somewhat sits in the middle. NVIDIA clearly is still top of class. But I mean, listen, it's the 10% correction today is painful. I will say, though, that you have essentially quadrupled and now you're taking off 10%. So you've got to understand that there is going to be an elevated amount of beta to these type of plays. You know, Supermicro, I think, you know, it's much like the Netflix situation where when you refuse to reveal a data point that you have made a habit of doing, I don't understand what you expect investors to do, particularly when that stock, I believe, is up 6 or 7 times over the last 12 months as well. So, you know, I do think that the moves are quite exacerbated, but when you take a step back and kind of look at them from a perspective of where have they come from, I just don't think that you can be surprised that investors...
This velocity doesn't bother you?
I mean, No. It bothers me, but it doesn't surprise me, is what I'm saying. So you can't... We've all said, listen, when we have these parabolic moves, it's hard for me to get behind trend. But you do understand the reason why is because you know that there is going to be a sharp pullback at some point. I'm just saying, still compare a 10% move down with a 6x move up. You've got to expect there to be some beta there eventually.
Yeah. Got to finish.
No, I'm just saying, yeah, and to Tim's point, there may be a shift in leadership, but again, I'm still inclined to probably buy ahead of earnings. Now, if earnings come out next week and the week after and they mail it in, that's when the concern really brews. But the tech stock, this complex, has really been the area where earnings growth has supported the moves higher versus just PE expansion. And so if they can't hold up, then I am quite concerned about the market. But I'm still willing to give them the benefit of the doubt in terms of them being able to deliver on earnings.
So when you look at how many of NVIDIA's clients are looking for other choices with chips as well, right? So NVIDIA still has 85% of the market, but they might not be able to supply the whole market. So you're going to need other choices. Then you have a negative headline or a negative article in Barron's. AMD, their biggest competitor, or their most active competitor. So you had mentioned Qualcomm, but AMD and NVIDIA are you know, replaceable for this components. If you look at tech, these, to Bonomo's point, this is where the earnings came from. So this is where the earnings are going to be taken out. The market goes up. It's on, you know, Tim always points out, the semiconductors led the market up. The mega cap led the market up. They're going to lead the ones down. Now, go to technicals. Got you going to say something?
No.
If you go to technicals, it's very rare that the market breaks just the 50-day. It breaks the 50, then the 100, and then it tests the 200. We're a couple of hundred handles off the 200. It's going there. Your NVIDIA is probably.
You think
going
it's
to...
going there on this run? You think? I mean, because yeah, that's a massive move, and we're back in October to do that.
Yeah, and when you look at the 50-day at 51.18, basically we ripped through that level, and then everyone was sort of readjusting, and then there was Powell, and then there was mega cap tech, then there was geopolitical. So you had a recipe for not disaster, but a recalibration. So I think we probably should head to 46.75.
All right, so we are lower, and they are leading the markets lower. Mike, I mean, you know, layer onto this, the move that we've seen in volatility, the anticipated higher range that we will be in volatility, maybe there's some seasonality aspect to this in terms of sell in May going on. And then, of course, there's the uncertainty surrounding the Fed. There's a lot to pile into this semiconductor meltdown.
Yeah, and of course, geopolitical risk as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you take a look at what the futures did overnight, obviously, that didn't turn out to be quite as concerning to the market when it opened today as it was in the overnight hours. But there's plenty to worry about. Look, you know, the market rallied basically on the strength of these stocks rather than just thinking about whether or not there's a lot more air potentially under them. And I believe that there is. Just think about, is a 10% correction in the S&P so far-fetched? First of all, they happen with great regularity. Secondly, the run that we had from the end of October to the end of March, up about 28% in the S&P, especially if you include some of the dividends as well. A pullback of 10% from that level, and I think that's probably what Steve is talking about, it makes a heck of a lot of sense. I mean, we're about halfway there, if you think that's what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, a 10% decline in the S&P. We're in a bear market, though, for NVIDIA. I'm you know, you can say that it's par for the course that we see a 10% pullback in the indices. Yes, But should we be more concerned that we're seeing it so sharp in what had been the poster child of what is hot, what is growth in this market?
No, you can be concerned about it. And I would just say, let's go to the cause of it. It's just not because things were overdone. Mike gets into some of the geopolitics, which are just a risk off. I mean, there's a lot of things. If the Fed came out today with comments that we kind of knew were coming and they were kind of quietly received, but they had a semi-annual testimony that came out. And in that, there were some interesting things that I thought were not even focused earlier, including the Fed pointing out that hedge fund gross exposure is way up there. In other words, that the risk taking they see in the markets is out there. But you know, we have made that 5.5% move. There are geopolitical dynamics. And think about the move that semis and high multiple tech. So again, longer duration assets, companies that aren't necessarily, I mean, obviously NVIDIA is, and certainly Apple and Meta are generating significant free cash flow. But the whole move in high tech and high multiple companies when the Fed started moving aggressively, part of this move is a week where we've cemented the fact that the Fed, and I'm Steve may or may not believe it's still going to happen. But the bottom line is the Fed's out of play here. I mean, they are not going to move in June, in my view. I think they're very unlikely to move in September. But that's what this week was about. This was a week when we got the combination of a better economy. So good news should be good news, but good news is kind of bad news and bad news is bad news. So it's a strange week and it doesn't end well when geopolitics have you needing to kind of cut risk.
Yeah, I don't discount the Fed's ability to be wrong on both sides of this. So I think that the Fed could very well be off the table and things a shock or CPI doesn't come in enough, and then we lose June. I don't negate the fact that they could be wrong, but you have 400 economists within the Federal Reserve that are obviously under the impression that we have to see weakness before we start cutting. Mm-hmm. There's long and variable lags. There's a reason why that phrase exists. If you wait until unemployment ticks higher, you've waited too long. You need to start cutting to get ahead of it. So that it has to feel like they're early. So it feels like it's early for them to cut right now. That's the proper time to be cutting. So I think they will be late. And I think Tim makes a great point. The market has done what I've been saying. They're going to talk hawkish and then they're going to act dovish. And I think the market.
Are you still saying that they're going to cut like in May?
No, not in May, but I do believe that they will. We're gone. You will agree that the market has said no cuts now.
Slim chance in December, let's say.
Right. So we went from seven to one or none. I think that it's a non-political body, supposedly, but I think that they're going to be forced to cut. I think they're somehow.
Well, November's got 25 bips in it.
I don't think they'll cut in November. It's after the election. So there's no reason to cut in November. So they'll have to cut once or twice before it.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I can hear you in terms of them being late, but I don't think the extent of lateness is all equal across the board. So what they don't have to do is wait like they did with inflation and saying that it's transitory and allow it to essentially be burning at 11 or 12% and then finally recognize. So I do think that there is a bit more wiggle room in terms of the unemployment rate that they're going to be willing to tolerate before making a move and allowing inflation to rear its ugly head, re-entrench itself. And then you have that, you have oil higher, which again isn't in the X data, and then you have the geopolitical risk. So I hear what you're saying. I'm kind of in between the two of you because I understand that Tim is saying that, some things have been incorporated this week. I would argue that the Fed funds futures have been shifting for the last 2 weeks and in fact, from, March, really. So we've already started to incorporate some of that issue. To Mike's point, moves of 10 and corrections of 10 to 20% are standard. These should not be expected. But again, I want to be very clear. I'm just not surprised. And I think that's really where I'm coming from. The last time we had a geopolitical risk, that was October, and that was a prime opportunity to buy. So what I'm saying is I'm approaching whatever jitterishness is in the market with an opportunity to
Are you adding to NVIDIA?
No.
No. You still have your position.
I still have some of my position. Am I still adding to it now? No. Why? No. That would just be fighting the trend unnecessarily.
So where are you looking for the opportunity? You're just talking about opportunity.
I would probably wait for it to stabilize. Like, I'm not going to sit here and catch a falling knife.
Okay.
Right? I'm still long, so...
I guess that's what I was getting at. What do you see this as a falling knife? Do you see this as continuing to go lower? And for a decline of NVIDIA of 20% so far from its peak, from that key reversal
I would be willing
day,
to
from
sell...
From the key reversal
I would be willing to sell 200-day moving average puts in NVIDIA.
Well, let's not forget that there was, you know, a good old-fashioned index that was up today, and that's called the Dow Jones. And I know we poo-poo what's going on, but the real economy, banks finished... BKX was up almost 1.7% today. Banks like this. Again, a stronger economy with people with jobs. And right now, the consumer, dynamic, we're all over the map. But, the market was up there.
Yeah. For more on where semis could be headed, let's bring in the chart master, Carter Braxton-Worth of Worth Charting. So, Carter, what levels are you watching?
Yeah, there's so much to watch. I think you referred to a key thing, that key reversal day, and the biggest one of all, and it's been downhill since. Before we get to the charts, what's also important is that the semis have peaked before the market, weeks ago, in fact. But let's look at four identical charts of the SOX, the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index. These are mathematically parallel lines. They're not my lines. The lines draw themselves. They're done by a computer. We blew out through the top, and now we're back down into the channel. That move from the low through to the top, of course, up some 60%+. Better than the S&P up 28, or the Q's up 32, or even Mag 7 up 45, 60%+, the best area of the market. And so it is a beta trade. Now it's the worst area of the market. Let's look at the next iteration. This is the same chart, but we bring in the midpoint. Now, right now, we're down about 16-17%. I think you'll see that on the next chart. It's all the same chart with just different annotations. That's a big 16.5 there. And then where might we be headed? Just to get to the actual midpoint, it would be 20%. And to get to the lower band, you're talking about something in the order of 30. Now, NVIDIA is down already 20, of course. There's every prospect that this is headed lower.
Every prospect that the stock is heading lower and NVIDIA is going lower to a correction of down 30%.
Remember, the whole notion of 10% is a correction and 20% is a bear, none of the it's not, and you can't find that anywhere. That was made up one day by somebody and everyone's embraced it. It's beta. It's how much you go up. It often is how much you come down. It's equal and opposite.
So given that semis are roughly 20% of the NASDAQ, what does this do to them? Where do you see the NASDAQ heading?
Well, that's right. And it's the area that was so loved, with a lot of capital pushed into it. The issue is when something gets crowded, whether it's a home builder or it's a bank, JP Morgan, and at some point it's just full, rich, or you want to say expensive, that's the funny mental term. But what we know is all bets are off once there's a rush for the door. And we have a bit of a rush for the door going on here in the market.
I heard him say funny mental again. He's making fun of us. I mean,
I started out as a funny mental analyst. It wouldn't work without somebody doing that.
No, but Carter is great at pointing out the logic of the charts are telling you something. And if you look at that chart, the NASDAQ 100, the most exciting index in the world, has been flat to the S&P now going all the way back to the end of May of 23. Yeah. So you've done nothing if you've been there to outperform.
Carter, always great to see you. Have a good weekend. Carter Braxton-Worth of Worth Charting. So, Mike, are you looking for opportunity? Are you battening down the hatches? How do you approach this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not going into the space that's been hard hit, but there are some areas and single names, actually, that have shown some relative strength. And that's really what I've been looking for. There have been a lot of stocks that were washed out for idiosyncratic reasons. United Health comes to mind. Actually, it's interesting, even names like Nike, which had really been punished early in the year, have actually held up better than the market has, certainly a lot better than the tech sector has. So, I'm not looking to deploy in that area, but, you know, United actually is a name that we added to. I think there are some places that you can look. These things are trading at much cheaper multiples, and they've got other things going on. So, I think there are places that you can add for sure, but technology is not the spot right now.
Coming up, a changeup in China as officials order Apple to pull some of Meta's apps. Could this be a TikTok retaliation? Plus, we'll lay out the options action on Microsoft ahead of next week's results. And a big moment in the crypto space, how Bitcoin will react after tonight's expected halving event. All that ahead. But first, we're digging into that big drop in Netflix after results last night, how the member metrics are changing and what it could mean for their growth going forward. The details when Fast Money returns.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Netflix tumbling the day after earnings, the stock closing the day down 9%. That's its worst day in 2 years. Weak second quarter guidance and a decision to stop reporting certain subscriber numbers, putting a chill into investors. The company saying during the earnings call that stats like subscriber growth and average revenue per user, ARPU, will be phased out in favor of what it calls profit-focused numbers starting next year. They want to turn the focus onto engagement. I spoke to Tom Rogers earlier today on Squawk Box, and he made a very interesting point, and that is advertisers, if they are trying to sell ads for this, you know, lower level tier, they will want those ARPU numbers. They will demand it. And so how are they going to build that side of the business out? What do you think?
You know, I think it's really a this is a tough sell for them. I understand at least their explanation of the logic as to why they no longer want to disclose this, because they're saying this really shouldn't be the focus area, particularly now that we have the ad tier, right? And in terms of ARPU, now we have essentially a mix of, you know, non-ad tier, ad tier, and it doesn't really translate to a one-to-one comparison. With that said, I still don't understand why you wouldn't, particularly if investors are saying this is what you want. And I think this kind of puts a bit of an overhang on what otherwise was a pretty strong quarter, particularly from sub and revenue growth. You know, I just don't really understand the logic behind why you would want to do this. With that said, they've given, what, about a year's worth of runway, three quarters worth of runway in terms of before they're going to remove this. So, you know, I tend to think this is a bit overdone, and perhaps, you know, to the other panelist's point, this is a rotation.
Wow, nice work there.
This is a rotation out of some of the names that had leadership previously.
So, look, Tom Rogers, but also known as the Godfather, has been right on Netflix for a long time. This is a stock, again, back to even our previous discussion in the A block in terms of stock that doubled really over the previous 4 months. I mean, it did it all very quickly. I think the market is taking away from this. Like the metrics of measurement are what they are. Advertisers may demand it, but what the market's taking away from this is that maybe the benefits from paid sharing may be starting to wane. That's what I think. And when you look at this company at 32 times price to free cash flow, I think it's expensive again. So I think that's really what's going on. And back to the stock and the charts. And, you know, Netflix is one of these stocks that you know, it's kind of a little bit like NVIDIA. I mean, you know, it kind of took the elevator up, and I don't know if it's going to take the elevator down, but it has done this before. And if you look at the chart, I mean, I as someone that sold this stock way too early on the way up, I think I'm going to get it at 480.
It was up 25% going into earnings yesterday.
If you think about this, not to go against the Godfather, Tom, but if you get into that conversation where you say that they will demand the ARPU, they will demand whatever stat or whatever data metric that they want.
Do we need to define ARPU right now?
I feel like we're not going to talk about it a lot, so why don't you go ahead?
There might be.
Go ahead.
Average revenue per user.
See how it's slow you have to go, because sometimes you're nervous about screwing it up sometimes.
Very nervous.
Feel it.
Yeah,
so if you come to Netflix and you say, I need that data, what's Netflix going to say? where else are you going to go? They've already established themselves as the king of the hill. So I get what he's saying. Somewhere down the road, they might need those types of data points.
But as long as they're
king right
of the
now, hill, yeah. Netflix is king of the hill. No one's going to ask for anything from Netflix. You just say thank you when they offer you a spot to advertise.
So you buy on this weakness?
Not yet. I'm going to go with Katie Stockton's mark, 500. Okay. She's looking for.
Okay. There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
A TikTok tit for tat, what Chinese officials are ordering Apple to do, and the social media giant getting the short end of the stick. Plus, Bitcoin's big moment, another potential halving expected tonight. So what will it mean for the space? How prices, volatility, and crypto miners will be affected? You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Welcome back to Fast Money. A rough end to the week for markets, with the Nasdaq down more than 2%. It and the S&P both logging their sixth straight day of losses, their longest losing streak since October 2022. The Dow, though, did manage to eke out a gain for the day and for the week. Tesla, meantime, again lower today, now solidly below that key $150 level. The latest move as the EV maker recalls nearly 4,000 Cybertrucks due to an accelerator pedal issue. That stock is now down more than 40% this year. On the upside, UNH with a huge week, up more than 14%, boosted by earnings on Tuesday. The company beating on the top and the bottom line, affirming strong full-year EPS guidance. Shares of Wells Fargo also higher again today. That stock trading at its highest level in more than 2 years. That sort of snuck up on me, that's for sure. Mike Coe, in terms of UNH, this week really turned the thing around.
Yeah, I mean, it had just been hit with so much bad news. I mean, first of all, we had that antitrust stuff. Then we had the managed care business. That was basically, it wasn't just United Health that got hit by that. Humana, obviously, as well. We had Centene. They've got a slightly different business mix. But, you know, these were businesses that were very hard hit. United Health is a name that has typically traded in the mid-20s in terms of multiples. And it deserved to, because it had that kind of growth. It's a cash flow generating monster. And now you're looking at maybe 16 and a half times forward. You know, there was a lot of bad news priced into the stock. I don't even think earnings needed to be that good to justify buying it. And we already owned it. We bought more of it.
All right. Coming up, Apple pulling the plug, the iPhone maker taking WhatsApp and Threads out of the App Store in China at Beijing's request. Our next guest will dig into why the App Store might be the new U.S.-China war zone. And big tech earnings kick off next week with Alphabet, Meta, and Microsoft. We'll give one name the options action touch and get you the trade going into the report. Stay tuned.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money Podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Apple complying with China's order to remove Meta's WhatsApp and Threads from the country's app store. Meta shares dropping 4% today, while Apple fell 1%. The move coinciding with an expected U.S. vote on a bill that could ban TikTok in the U.S. if it's not divested from China's ByteDance. Let's bring in Mike Isaac, technology correspondent at The New York Times. Mike, great to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You actually think the App Store is like a new proxy war location for what's going on with China and the United States. Do you think it can go further than where it's gone so far?
This is the sort of strange position that China is in here in terms of, I guess, remuneration for, you know, the threat of taking down TikTok, which is that a lot of the apps that they took down yesterday, which includes WhatsApp and Threads, but also Signal and Telegram, were largely banned in China already. So I think, you know, you're not exactly hurting Americans in the same way that, you know, Americans might hurt the Chinese by cutting off a huge market for them over here. So I do wonder what their escalation would be next.
So you're not really clear on what they could do next. You don't think that there's any further clear pain? I mean, Apple is the obvious sort of pawn. or would be the obvious pawn in this tech war. Do you think that there could be repercussions for that, or could it go like Shein and Temu pulling all the ads from the U.S.?
You're exactly right. Like one of those, we did a story the other day on how Shein and Temu and Chinese companies in general make up about 10% of Meta's entire advertising budget over the last few quarters, I want to say. And, you know, Meta is quick to say, hey, that's pretty diversified. It's not any one or two companies. But the Chinese government starts saying, you know, stop spending there. That can ding Meta pretty quickly. Maybe they talk to Chinese gaming companies that are there that also spend tons of money on advertising dollars. There are like indirect ways that I think this sort of proxy war could be ratcheted up. But I feel like Apple is just in a super gnarly position because they don't want to be caught in the middle of it. And their business is so reliant on China.
Hey, Mike, it's Tim. And good use of gnarly there, by the way. and I guess let's use gnarly again. I feel like in the last 3 days, this has gotten really gnarly, right? Isn't this a function of the Chinese embassy going to the Hill and lobbying on behalf of at first just somebody, and then it was a Chinese company, and then it's a Chinese company that really, you know, you wouldn't be doing this to anyone else but a Chinese company. So, Apple has been able to navigate this tightrope for a long time. We've all been amazed at it. And Apple, who's pretty self-righteous about their ability to protect the consumer and rights and freedom of speech. But somehow in China, they can be a monster and be OK. And we let them, you know, anyway, I'll leave that alone. Did it get a lot worse in the last 3 days? Is this really a function of what just happened with TikTok?
I think that is largely, I mean, the way I've been looking at this whole thing is pretty symbolic in some ways, because, again, 15 million people use WhatsApp in China. The Great Firewall already doesn't let you use it unless you're using a VPN, which sort of circumvents that. So it's not, say, cutting off a huge arm for Meta, but it is saying, look, these are American popular apps in the rest of the world. We are, you know, we, the Chinese government, are saying we don't want them here anymore. They, according to people we talked to, sort of were saying it had to do with President Xi Jinping and content that was inflammatory towards him. But you're exactly right. Like, this has been ratcheting up in the past few days. We saw that Politico story about people on the Hill now lobbying Congress. And I'm very curious what's going to happen this weekend, basically.
Yeah. In terms of what could happen, Mike, I mean, let's say this thing does pass. I mean, do you honestly think the Chinese government is going to allow ByteDance to sell TikTok? I mean, what is golden about TikTok is the algorithm. And do you think the Chinese government is going to let that go with the sale of TikTok? I would doubt it. Is this sort of just, I mean, what are we really arguing out about here? Because if you do this, effectively, the next step is going to be TikTok pulling out of the U.S.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that, you know, it's been interesting to see the Chinese sort of say, we would rather kill this than sell it and give the golden goose to some other company. And to some degree, that was probably brinksmanship. But at the same time, they probably would not be a huge deal if they lost, you know, let's say tens of billions of dollars or even $100 billion, depending on how much you value the algorithm, compared to whatever untold riches or power this company could lead to in the hands of an American coalition. And there's been, you know, sort of investor groups saying they want to try and buy it or rebuild the algorithm. I don't think it's that simple. I think it's very hard to copy what they've done over there. But I could see a real scenario where they shut it off and say, here, if you want to buy the rest of it without the algo, good luck, basically.
Yeah, if it were that easy, Facebook would have done it. Mike, yeah, great totally. To speak with you. Thank you.
Thank
Mike
you.
Isaac of the
me.
New York Times. And so if that is really one of the real consequences, that TikTok gets, you know, pulled out of the United States, that just makes the
great
gains.
For Meta.
Right, for
and
Meta.
And that was down today.
And for Snap.
Snap was down, yeah, Snap was down 4%
but
today. That was a little shocking.
Prior. Have enough going into these packages going to the Hill.
Yeah, I think this is the bigger thing is that China is not an ally. China, we're in a cold war right now with China on many levels. And it's a political season. And what's it going to take the biggest bite out of? It's going to take the biggest bite out of tech. Tech's responsible for making the market go higher. That's my takeaway.
I mean, I'm much more concerned about Apple than I am Meta here. In fact, I'd be looking for an entry point, I guess, continuing the theme from earlier. You know, Apple does not want more attention brought on the App Store. That is a direct assault on the service business that essentially that we're saying is the reason why it deserves such a premium multiple. So that would be a pair of trade I might be looking for in the short term.
Sticking with tech here, Microsoft, Meta, and Alphabet all reporting next week. With Microsoft underperforming in this group so far this year, could earnings change the story for the stock? Let's bring back the chart master, Carter Braxton-Worth, as well as Mike Coe for some good old-fashioned, old-school options action ahead of the print. So, Carter, kick us off with the charts.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously this is a big and prominent name that matters to all, perhaps not widely as owned as Apple, but got to be number two, surely, and bigger market cap now. So here's a chart. We have three with the 150-day moving average. That October sell-off was a 15%er, and I think we're headed down there again. So take a look at the next iteration. And what you'll see here is we dropped 15.6%. We touched the 150-day to the penny, and we bounced. Now, this sell-off, I think, is going to do the exact same thing. And that would take us down 12%. And it's also exactly where the trend line, and that's the point of a moving average, is essentially an automated trend line, comes into play. So lower from here, and then if and as we get to that level, play for a bounce.
So, Mike, what's the trade?
Yeah, it's interesting. Options are very, very fairly priced, actually, going into the print. So right now, the implied move is about 3.9%, and that's about what it has averaged. And in fact, over the last eight quarters, you've had about half of them that were significantly more than that. So I think what you should be looking at is if you're looking to make a bearish bet, you could put the 400-380 put spread on that expires in May. You could also use that as a hedge against your long stock. Usually I'm looking for about a 3-to-1 payoff. It's not quite affording you that, but we're keeping these strikes pretty tight. That pays 2-to-1, costs a little over $6.90 to put it on, and could be as worth as much as 20 at May expiration if it falls to that lower strike or below.
You bearish into earnings?
I think the bar has been actually lowered a bit, but I think the price action is difficult. I'll just say this about Apple. You know, of all the stocks that traded today, it traded the best of this group, and I think it's got, you know, the most pressure here. And it's interesting that 165 level on the chart is one that I wouldn't have thought could have held up today. And again, if you remove a 50 to 60% move from the fourth quarter of 22 to the summer of 23, this stock's done nothing for 2 years.
Carter, thank you. Coming up, crypto's big moment, just a matter of hours until the expected Bitcoin halving. What it will mean for miners, volatility, and the future of Bitcoin. The CEO of a major crypto exchange will join us to lay out his expectations. But first, P&G and American Express both reporting results this morning. How our traders are handling those moves when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Let's turn now to two stocks making moves after earnings this morning, starting off with Procter & Gamble. That stock falling nearly 2.5% on disappointing sales numbers, but climbed back to close in the green, revenue missing for a second straight quarter, the first time that has happened since 2020. Still, the company beat earnings estimates and raised its full-year outlook for EPS growth. And the concern here was consumers pushing back on price increases.
Pushing back, they should be. And also, again, you're in the sweet spot of being able to pass on higher food inflation. And I think I think consumer staples are becoming a lot more defensive in this environment after really underperforming in that same period when the tech stocks were outperforming.
Meantime, American Express up more than 6% today after a top and bottom line beat. Revenue up 11% year on year, although barely topping estimates. The company is saying card member spending increased 7% from a year ago and that Gen Z and millennials drove new card accounts. That stock hitting an all-time high today. Steve?
What year is Gen Z,
I was
by
about
the way?
To say, how
what
old are they now?
Gen Z?
Yeah, they're getting older now.
Am I Gen Z?
No. No, I don't think any
what are we,
older.
X? I don't even know what I'm
kidding. I know I'm not Gen Z.
Yeah. Old.
We're old?
Thinking.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, yeah. So, I've always looked at, first of all, they've outperformed every other credit card company. And when you look at what people are spending money on, they're spending it on airlines as well. And they're spending it, they're treating themselves, and they're sitting in front of the plane, not in the back of the plane.
Hold on, in front. In the front of the plane or in front
not,
of
they're
the
not,
plane?
They're not flying the plane. They're not flying the plane. They're sitting right behind the pilot. They're in first class. They're treating themselves. So prices are up. So that means that's good for it. It's actually a tailwind to keep it in place for the airlines.
No pun intended.
To keep it consistent. Delta, it's probably a tailwind for them. Mm-hmm. But we're still talking about higher end clients.
I'm told that Gen Z.
Yeah.
is 12 to 27.
12 to 27.
You're clearly
What's
not
X?
Part of that generation.
I'm slow down.
So you guys are older
than say
me.
It like that.
You guys are all.
You have to, I mean, you're like, clearly. You're
27.
Not
gonna, do you think any of us passed for 27, Tim?
No.
Let's be honest.
But I'll stop
hopeful.
Talking.
Wishful thinking.
Anyway, all right. Coming up, the halving is here. We're just hours away from the expected Bitcoin halving, and major crypto exchange CEO is joining us to lay out what he expects from the price action after the crypto cut. That is next. And here's a sneak peek at the Cramer cam. Jim is chatting exclusively with the CEO of Carvana. Catch the full interview top of the hour on Mad Money. Meantime, more Fast Money in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. All eyes on crypto as investors await the Bitcoin halving, where the cryptocurrency's future supply is cut in half. This will be the fourth time Bitcoin has gone through this process, but the setup this time is different. For more, let's bring in Kraken CEO Dave Ripley. Dave, great to have you with us. Why is it different this time around? I mean, we've already seen a huge run-up, and that has happened in every other halving. So why is it different this time?
Thanks for having me on, Melissa. You know, I think there is a lot that is the same for this Bitcoin halving. There are some new things. You know, what is the same? It's a great reminder of the deterministic supply of Bitcoin, never more than 21 million, first currency in the history of the world to have such a thing. You know, what's different? Well, I mean, I think obviously, you know, the price tends to be a, topic, you know, a high topic here. And so I would say, you know, this is the first time we actually saw an all-time high before the halving. Typically, in the past kind of bull bear cycles for Bitcoin, we've seen the all-time high come a number of months after the halving. So we're a little bit ahead of schedule this time. Honestly, I think it's the more meaningful thing for me, at least, is it's a great reminder of one of the most magnificent properties of Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. You say that you don't necessarily want to focus on this. I mean, this is a catalyst, but there are bigger things like just adoption overall. Where do you see that going now that we have Bitcoin ETFs, and how does that play into price?
Yeah, so, you know, I think a great topic as well. I mean, over the past 4 years in this last halving cycle, we've seen a huge number of new innovations in Bitcoin, in cryptocurrency, DeFi, NFTs. We've seen institutions come in, governments come in, even El Salvador adopting Bitcoin directly. And we expect more of the same in this this next four-year cycle. A lot of that investment that came in the previous cycle is all kind of been deployed at this point. Builders are building, entrepreneurs are building, and we'll start seeing a lot of those innovations come out in the not too distant future. And I think that, again, the short-term movements for Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, there is volatility there, there is more uncertainty, but the long arc and the long trajectory is going to be a positive one.
When does this volatility dampen? And I'm wondering specifically when it comes to Bitcoin ETF, if that in and of it, I mean, if adoption of the ETF, if adoption of Bitcoin and just more holders out there, if that inherently dampens volatility?
Well, it does. I mean, certainly the more holders, the more liquidity in the system, both those holding and those transacting and those trading, all of these aspects actually do reduce volatility over time. And so the reality is, while Bitcoin crypto is still volatile, they're not as volatile as they were 10 years ago or 5 years ago. And so we do see that coming down over time as adoption grows. Now, it is still an incredibly innovative technology with a lot of new things happening in the space. And so it's not as if volatility is going away completely, but it is coming down generally over time. So the general trend is for the price to go up, and the general trend is for volatility to go down again over the multi-year period.
So, David, when I look at this, I think the all-time highs, running to all-time highs, was a direct reflection of the 11 ETFs that came out, not because of the halving. I think that we're still on track to make another all-time high with after the halving, the same way that the other three did that as well. But when you look at use cases, people say you buy Ethereum for use case, you buy Bitcoin as a digital asset. Is Bitcoin going to change that narrative?
Marginally. We've seen ordinals come on, the Bitcoin network more recently. But look, Bitcoin is the first, it's tried and true, it's digital gold. That's one of the beautiful aspects of it, is that it is the most stable from a security standpoint, all of these aspects. And so it that's, you know, a role in the ecosystem, and it's an incredible new innovation for the world from that standpoint. Part of the purpose of all of the new networks are, in fact, to innovate and do something different than Bitcoin. I mean, otherwise, why would they even exist? Just, you know, use Bitcoin. And so I think we do see more innovation in other networks with Bitcoin. It's kind of like trying to replace the landing gear on a 777, right? Mm. We're going to like look for more certainty before there's a change to that network.
Dave, thank you. Dave Ripley of Kraken. Up next, Final Trades. Final trade time, Mike Coe.
Cheap to itself, cheap to the market. I think it represents a good value off this bounce, United Health.
Tim.
Ranger hockey on Sunday, by the way.
No, you're getting ready playoff hockey. Totally there.
XLU, trading well utilities.
Bono in.
Meta, I'm looking for an opportunity to buy some weakness going in earnings.
Steve.
Exelon said that electricity demand is going to be up 900% in Chicago
when?
Due to AI demand. I don't know, like tomorrow? Oh, soon.
So very, eventually.
Very soon. Exelon, EXC.
All right. Thank you so much for watching Fast Money. Have a terrific weekend. Don't go anywhere. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/fastmoneydisclaimer.
You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.